Welcome to Podnuts Computer Repair Podcast, episode number 228, Fixing IT Right. I am your host, Jeff Hallish. This is our live call-in show for computer repair techs. We answer your questions on running and operating your computer repair business. The call-in number is 1-888-697-0162. Computer Repair Podcast is brought to you by Ninja, the simple-to-use remote monitoring and management solution. Try it free at info.ninjamsp.com/podnuts. Let me introduce the co-hosts. We have John Dubinsky from the Maven Group. How are you doing, John?
I appear to be functioning within normal parameters, Jeff.
Good to have you. And also that laugh comes from none other than Chris Carruthers from Remote Support Tech Team. How are you doing, Chris?
I am not assimilated, unlike some other co-hosts, it sounds like.
Chris, why don't you go ahead and start off this week and give us a quick, well, it doesn't have to be quick, but a tip or story that we could learn from.
Yeah, jump on this Vista train, guys. Seriously. I am amazed, right? I'm amazed at how many people are still running Windows Vista that had no idea that, you know, the 11th is the deadline for the security updates. So I have been doing a lot of data transfers, you know, setting up Windows 10 computers, transferring data over from Windows Vista. Been using Zinstall to do all those. Gave Jeff some links for that. But it's kind of a nonstop ride right now, and we're probably going to wind up seeing a lot of people, you know, trying to stick around with it like they did with XP. So that over the next year, I'm expecting to see a lot of these data transfers and a lot of computer upgrades over it.
Very true statement right there. Yeah, there's still a lot of Vista machines out there. I don't know why, other than that's just what people have. Matter of fact, I just got a call from a customer, actually a text message from a customer today saying that he had just gotten a new computer because I had let him know about the whole Vista thing, and that's what he had and that's what he was working with. And so he ordered a computer. Now I got to go and set it up for him.
Hey, well, you know, just tossing it out there, but I am white labeling that Zinstall transfer for $80 a pop.
Oh, so nice.
You can always just have me do it. I'm just
saying. There you go. Pay Chris to do work you don't want to.
That's right.
I like it. Which I don't want to really want to do most of my work anymore anyway. Oh, so anyways, John, what do you have to share with us this week?
Well, a little follow-up from last week, if we remember, and I'll have all the links for this stuff in the show notes. But we talked about this ZTC device, which allows you to put in, if I pull this out and I can hold it up to the video, an MMC and an M.2 device inside of a SATA enclosure. So I just wanted to show that. And I'll have a link for that in the show notes on Amazon. Okay. But that's really handy if you want to connect, if you have a pull out of another device and you want to do some testing or data recovery on an MMC or an M2.
Okay.
What I ran into last week was just a little bit of frustration, as we always do, I guess. I was trying to do something really simple. I was taking a 2.5-inch SSD, mounted into a Dell Optiplex small form factor computer. For those of you that do those a lot, I was trying to do it in a 780. And usually, wow, this is pretty easy, right? You just toss the SSD into a little mounting bracket, slide it into the 3.5-inch compartment and screw it in, and life is good. Or in that, it's even toolless. You just bend some pins and bend them back and life is great. Problem I had is the little mounting thing I had has some crossbars on the bottom of the metal plate. On the 780, there's a fan on the bottom of the hard drive where the hard drive mounts. So just enough tolerance closure. If I took the PC and I laid it horizontal on a table, I would get a buzz because the crossbars would just touch the fan enough to make it buzz.
Oh, no.
So I'm thinking to myself, you know, and of course I got to install this in the morning. So I got frustrated and I said, bag it, I got to come up with something better. So I bought 6 different trays to test. And I'll have all the links in the show notes. But the one that I found that I really like and is by a company called IcyDock, which I'd never heard of before, and it's plastic. I'm holding it up right now. But the cool thing about it is it's a totally toolless mounting bracket. So I can take 2 2.5-inch devices, slide it in here without any tools, I like it that it's full size, so it fits in a 3.5-inch bay. I like it that there's nothing in the middle here, so my fans aren't going to rub. Nothing's going to rub. I just slide the drive in, click, slide this in, click, and I'm done. So nice. I thought that was pretty handy. That's my little discovery. And everything that all the links that I have, the only devices I chose would be delivered prime, because that's, you know, I figured if I wanted to do this, I'd want it quick. So I'll have all that in there, and just make sure you use the podnuts.amazon.com link when you order.
Awesome. Yeah. Very good. That's a great tip right there, John, because I know I've never really liked any of the mounting for any of the smaller drives. It's just they don't seem
well, to work. Well, just to kind of review these, the couple of them I bought, one of them is by Inatech, it's kind of handy. And it was probably the least expensive out of all of them that I bought, but I'm holding up the bag. But this one actually comes with the mount, with SATA cables, with a power conversion cable, and a small screwdriver.
Ooh.
But
wait, there's more.
It's actually built pretty well. It's not very bendy or whatever. The metal's pretty solid. But I don't like the small size dock. I'm going to hold these up to the video if you guys can see the difference. I like it when the dock, when it's full size. Like, I like it this. Right. So it actually fits in the whole 3.5-inch bay versus the smaller size. So, part of my playing around with that, I actually found that I like the full size much better than the smaller ones.
Well,
Jeff. Say that again, Chris.
The full size one be sturdier too, right? Because you have more mounting points.
Well, there's a lot. Yeah, you think that, but this one, which was actually might have been the Corsair, was probably the thinnest and cheapest metal out of all of them.
Oh,
so. The Sabre were very good quality. This Intertech is pretty good quality, but like I said, and it came with a ton of stuff, but I don't like the small drive carrier.
Okay.
So.
Good.
That's my 2 cents, and I'll put all those links in there.
Awesome. Great. So, to move into my long story, as usual. I basically had my network install yesterday, went out on the job about 10 a.m. because, quite honestly, I just wasn't getting out there any earlier. And I started to look at the monstrous amount of cables sitting behind the furniture. And I got in there, and that's the very first thing that I had to clean up. So probably out of 24 plus cables, I think I ended up keeping about 7. Because that's all that was actually plugged. That's all that was actually working on the switch. I have no idea where the other cables go. Don't know what they went to. This is a system and a switch. It was probably put in well over 12 years ago. And what's funny about this story, though, is the Friday night before I'm confirming my appointment and getting ready to go out there the next day, Saturday, they let me know that the internet's down. And basically, when I get in there on Saturday, the switch had died. In other words, this ferocious fan that was gooked up with all kinds of dirt and whatnot over the years finally just quit. So the lights are blinking all over the place and it's just not working. I'm like, yeah, it's pretty much done. So anyways, I pull everything apart. I clean up all the wires, get everything tied up really nice and neat, label the ones that I'm going to keep because I know where they go, and basically mount the switch, router, and wireless access point all to the wall, getting a ugly old shelf out there that was about to fall off the wall anyways. And so I neaten everything up. It's in a corner of an office. Very nice, very neat. Plug everything in. Well, in the midst of this, they also have a phone system that's hooked into the modem. And I know absolutely next to nothing about any of these VoIP systems. Yeah, I learned a lot yesterday. So in the midst of me setting all this stuff up, I said, okay, let me clean these wires up for this phone system because there's just wires everywhere in this one spot. So I want to get everything clean. So if somebody needs to work on it, they can get to whatever. So I take all the stuff and I unplug one at a time each of the cables, pull it out of the rat's nest, plug it right back in. Thought I did a perfect job on every one. Well, out of the whatever, probably 5, 6, 7 cables that would go into that phone system, apparently I put one in the wrong hole. So I had set all this stuff up. I was working with setting the router and different things up. And the owner comes in and says, you know, our phone systems are still down. I'm like, yeah, the box is blinking really weird on that modem. All the lights are blinking, which is, it's not supposed to do that. So I finally, we call up WOW, make a long story short. We call up WOW. They reset the modem. Nope, it's not that. We're not sure if this other phone system died. We're not sure what's going on. And so I know nothing about this phone system. And that's why I only unplugged one at a time and put it back together. Well, I got a quick lesson on the job, which was good. So now this owner had just put out like 1,500 flyers. And they were kind of panicking a little bit because they have to receive phone calls. So what I did was I logged into the Aeris modem and looked at it. And all of a sudden I saw telephony. And there was an overcurrent surge or something along those lines. I'm like, okay, something's creating a loop somewhere. I get that. Basic electronics. But I'm not sure exactly how these things are supposed to be plugged in. So I basically go back. I said, hey, do you got a big flashlight we can get behind in this, you know, behind the side of this desk to look at these things? Because I can't see the lettering. I don't understand why manufacturers on a black box will just leave the lettering, even though it's raised, black and very tiny. Anyways, he goes out to his truck. He gets this big light. So I'm looking at it and I'm following the wires. And there's four different holes in the back where you can take from the modem, the telephone modem from the ISP provider. And basically that goes into two slots for two numbers. And so I followed the lines back and there's four holes. Number one, I think it was like, it either said one or two or one and two, two and three or something like that. Number two. And then there was like a three and four or something. It was weird. And so I'm looking at it and I go, well, I guess if I was going to have two phone numbers coming in here, I would probably want to make sure that it's in one. And then the one that only has a single number, the number two. So once I did, I pulled that cable out, plugged it back in. Once you know, the phone's lit up and the modem went back to working properly and everything was fine. So that was my dilemma on the whole phone system. But going back to setting up the router, the switch, and the wireless access point, I have my own system at home. I set it up. John walked me through a couple steps, not a big deal. And not thinking about it, I said, okay, they don't have Google Chrome on this particular machine, but I should be able to use Internet Explorer and do the same things to get into the firmware on each of these devices and set them up. Well, no, you can't because Edge doesn't work. Internet Explorer 11 didn't work. And so John, I was talking to him on the phone. He's like, well, just for grins and giggles, why don't you download Chrome and see if that works? Downloaded it. Boom. Now I can go in and change things, save the settings, and it's actually working the way it was supposed to. So that took more time away from doing the things I needed to get done. Plus, I had this phone issue in the middle of all that. So long story short, got the phone system fixed, went back in, cleared up, got the wireless access point set up with the same username and passwords they had on their old system. So that way all their wireless devices would connect. And there's a couple things, a couple tweaks I probably need to do to some of that equipment. And we're going to follow up on Monday and finish some of that stuff up. So I just need to find out what it is they need. And if there needs to be any port forwarding for their camera system so they can actually log into their camera system and figure out, actually see the cameras on their phones or whatever. So there was a couple of those things set up, which to me, there was no settings in the old router that was there. There was no settings in the switch. So I'm not sure exactly what they had going on, but we'll figure it out. Anyways, that was my network story. So double check your work and take your time and try not to make a long day, because when you do a long day, 6-7 hours, by the end of the day, it gets kind of long and you're a little tired and your brain doesn't work as well as it did at 10 a.m. So anyways, that is my story. And joining us today, we also have Paco LeBron from Prodigy Techs. How you doing, Paco?
Hello.
And why don't you go ahead and throw out a story or a tip for us?
Sure. tip for everyone, if you have clients that come back to you after 3-4 years that you haven't spoke with them, make sure to update them on what your rates are at that time, because eventually you will have probably raised your rates since then. So I had a client call me, it was Tuesday, requested me back. I haven't seen them since 2014, and that was predated any CRM software I had, any whatever. So I have a PDF somewhere with their name. So I didn't even have their address in my repair shopper system. So ran through the whole thing, told them about the paperwork that's got to get signed on site, et cetera, and told them the rate. So basically he was kind of taken aback because I guess at the time I was charging half that rate. Yeah. Half that rate at the time. So when it doubled, it kind of almost shocked them to all lords and stuff, because I can't swear right now, but essentially, he basically was okay with it. Because he wanted me to come down there, and it just proves to the point of, if they want you specifically, you know, they're going to pay whatever the rate is because they know you're going to get the quality care that you're going to provide them. So, but I know that there's been a lot of technicians, including a couple friends of mine, where they haven't seen their clients in, let's say, a year, maybe a little bit shorter of a time, but they've raised their rates, and then they'll go on site, complete the work, tell them the new rate, and turns out to be a hairy situation.
See, I think I would have just told them that, listen, I've got more experience and I'm twice as good now.
I just told him what it is. I mean, you know, and then once I showed him, like, you know, once I showed him the intake form and the stuff that we were doing, he's like, wow, you got a lot more sophisticated than, you know, 3-4 years ago that you were here. It's like, well, you know,
that's right. Happen. Plus you're buying me and right. You can't put a price on me.
Pretty much. I mean, everyone has a price. But.
That's right. As Paco and I have talked about. Oh,
great. Which coincidentally, today is WrestleMania as well, so it fits in with $1 Million Man. So.
Now, I have had a couple of situations where I used to do virus removals for $50. Yes, I'm one of those. And I raised my rates, and you know, now it's a flat 89 if you bring it to me. And basically, I've had a couple customers where I didn't even tell them that I raised my rates. And I just sent them the invoice. Hey, here's the invoice. Here's your computer, whatever. And they looked at it and they're like, oh, you charge a lot more. I said, well, I'm better at it now. Nice. Now, either they laugh and chuckle like I do, or they get offended. Either way, I win. So I'm good with that.
And what's funny is that how old this client is that apparently I had convinced him to buy Malwarebytes when they were lifetime licenses before they renewed to their yearly.
Oh, wow.
So when he had 3.0 on his machine, I was like, yeah, you probably should really think, oh, you bought the pre. Oh, yeah, that's right. We did get you a license at the time. So that tells you how long it was.
Nice.
I see.
Very good. All right. Let's take a quick break and then we will go into our main topic. Our show today brought to you by Ninja, the remote monitoring and management solution to help you become more efficient, more productive, and more profitable. With Ninja, you can have a faster fixed response time and offer preventative maintenance to your customers. Ninja understands what you need to run your business, which is why their RMM solution is integrated with tools you use every day. Ninja provides competitive pricing, patch management, antivirus, email, SMS alerting. You can be up and running quickly with minimum training time. Everybody likes that, right? You have TeamViewer integration for that remote support. It's one solution for managed and non-managed clients alike. Network visibility inside the RMM. Easy to read dashboards. And Ninja is always working on new features. They have a powerful device search where you can create custom queries and export the list to show your customers. And an executive style port showing important system metrics such as health score, software added or removed, hardware changes, and TeamViewer connections, which Paco gets all giddy about that. Ninja is offering Podnuts a free 30-day trial when you decide to buy a 10% discount. Take advantage of this offer. Go to info.ninjamsp.com/podnuts. All right. So the title of the show was Fixing IT Right, or Fixing It Right. Little play on words, yes. Yeah, there you go. So basically, how do you handle when someone brings in a computer for a hardware fix and their software is a mess? It's virus-ridden, malware, whatever. Maybe there's some things that aren't working properly. But all they want you to do is fix the hardware. They don't want to pay to get it all fixed. What do you do in that situation? John, what do you do?
Well, you know, my situation might be a little bit different since I do mostly business work. But, you know, there's a happy medium on licensing because it can be such a rat's nest to chase down. So usually where I kind of land on this subject is you got to have something and we're not falling miles behind. I understand it a little bit if, you know, we need to bend something because you use one product on one computer once every 6 months. But, you know, we're not going to try to hack 90 computers with a, you know, some sort of Office license that your cousin Tim got for you. Not at least on my watch, you know. And then obviously, if you have a product, in my opinion, that runs your business, QuickBooks Enterprise or something like that, you know, you have to have support and all that from them as well. Because if something bad happens, yeah, I can help you get QuickBooks Network. I can do that. But, you know, I can't look under the hood like a QuickBooks technician can or like somebody like Chris can. So, sure, you know, either you got to have somebody in your back pocket like Chris to help you with that sort of things that's a professional, or, you know, you got to go back to the company that knows, you know, the underpinnings on that. But in my opinion, if the customer isn't willing to pay for the license, matter of factly, I feel like they're stealing something.
Gotcha. Okay. Chris, what about you?
I don't listen to Tim either, but I know how much you love this, but it depends. Because, you know, I do break fix too, right?
Right.
I'm not just MSP. So if somebody comes to me and, you know, they've got a video card that's failing, and, you know, they're heavily infected, right? I'm probably going to tell them that if they want me to replace the video card, I need to deal with the viruses as well, because I don't want them coming back in a week telling me that something's not working and it's my fault. So chances are, if there's something like that going on, I'm going to have them fix it all or do none of it. If they're running a pirated version of Windows or anything like that, and it's obvious that that's the case, then they need to fix that, or I'm not fixing the computer.
Okay.
If their Outlook's not working, and then they want me to do something with Word or, you know, something that's related, I'm going to make sure that when I have them sign the intake form that they're signing on there, that they are aware that Outlook is not working so that it doesn't come back on me. But I'm not going to force every customer to have a fully working computer if they don't want to pay for that support.
Okay.
So that's how I handle it. But yeah, 99% of the time, if it's something noticeable, it's going to be something that they're going to need to have fixed at the same time, or I'm just going to turn the whole thing down.
Gotcha. Paco?
So this is kind of works through with the diagnostic process that we have. So I run the hardware test and the software. So this scenario can go either way. So if I go ahead and let them know they've signed the intake form where they're not holding us liable for anything, we run the test and basically it's a LCD screen replacement. But once we put the LCD on, we run it through, we find out that there's a virus on there. After we've tested the screen, we let them know, hey, this thing is ridden with malware. We do suggest you do a virus removal as well. But, you know, we can repair what you brought it in for. Now, if they basically they have to reply back in writing within the email stating, no, just complete the LCD screen. So that way I have it in writing. I have their intake form signed. If for some reason, software wise, something goes wrong, then I have that to them. But it also helps later on that you pointed out something to them, because let's say 3 weeks from now, maybe they didn't realize they had a virus and they've just been dealing with it being slow. They're like, man, if it is a virus, I probably would like to get rid of this. They'll bring it back and get the virus off of it because we notified them of what was going on. Now, in the opposite side, if let's say they brought it in for a virus removal and turns out that the hard drive is dead or is failing, if they decide not to replace the hard drive, then I'm going to turn it down because removing the virus is not going to do anything because the computer is going to die at X amount of time, and they're going to try and hold us liable for it. So if they tell us they're not going to replace it, we're going to turn the job down. So it depends on the situation. But in the scenario that we're talking about now, where if we replace hardware and it's a software issue, it's notified to them. If they say continue to move on with the machine, then that's how we go from there.
So going back to what kind of what everybody said is it depends. And it depends on the situation. And I've done it both ways, where somebody's come in and if it's a hardware repair, like a screen, a DC jack, yeah, whatever, even a video card or something like that. A lot of times I won't even, you know, as long as the system's working, I didn't generally go in looking for other problems, but you guys bring some valid points that maybe those are things that need to be brought up. And Paco, I like what you said, is that you bring it to their attention. And so that once they're made aware of it and they make the decision in their minds to bring it back and have it fixed properly, instead of, you know, if they didn't want to have it fixed at that time or whatever, that's fine. You're going to pay for the service either way. One of the things I was reading in one of the groups was somebody had this issue where somebody basically came in and they needed a DC jack repair. And this technician could see that there was a lot of viruses and malware and things on the system. Let their customer know about it. And now they'll run malware bytes or they'll do some other things. Now, obviously, whatever they've been doing up to this point has not been working, but they're going to come up with some miracle Hail Mary that's going to fix the problem.
I remember that post. They said that they were going to take care of it with MicroTrend or something.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Thank you. And I'm just like going, are you kidding me? So that just kind of brought up this subject. At what point do you say, I don't want the liability? Because here's a perfect example. What I was talking about earlier in my network story is that had I done nothing to their phone system when I was installing the rest of the network, had I not touched anything, it would have still been my fault.
Sure. and you got to look beyond liability too, right? You got to look at company image or tech image if you're a solo tech. I mean, yeah.
Why can't I be a company, Chris?
You can be both. But, you know, if you turn around and, I mean, even just look at the virus situation, right? You're replacing a DC jack. Somebody's got a virus on their computer and you don't say anything to them about it, then you're going to start getting blamed for the problems. They're going to tell all your friends. And it doesn't matter whether you're liable enough. It doesn't matter whether or not they can take you to court and fight anything on it. What it comes down to is that this is the story that everybody's going to hear. So where's the balance between telling the customer and rejecting the job gracefully, telling the customer and continuing the job while making sure that the customer somehow fully understands, even though we all know that they never really fully understand us when we're talking, or this really weird spot in the middle.
Right. Yeah, it's a tough call because, and John, you know, everybody said, and John said this many, many times, but yeah, anytime you touch anything, you are responsible, even if you had nothing to do with it. And so the blame's always going to be on you because you could have just been in the room and, oh, what'd you do? You could have been at home in your office and something happens in the customer's office and they call you up and go, what'd you do? It's like,
I laugh. My favorite one is, I don't remember when this was, but you know, I walked in the office and some guy looks up at me and goes, oh, you're here. I was wondering why the internet was slow. Of course, I can't do the hand gesture that I did to him, but that's all right.
Yeah, it's a funny story. So in my last job, we had our production servers and our pre-production servers at a colo location. And whenever IT would actually go down there, there was a loose cable that had the clip broken. So they never fixed the clip. So it just was one of those where they would walk by it and it would dislodge out of the case and pre-production would be down. So essentially every time the pre-production would be down, we'd text whoever the head IT was at that time. Hey, are you guys at the colo? Yep. Plug us back in. Oh, they'll plug it in. So finally somebody was smart enough to say they recrimped it and actually put a good clip back on it.
Wow.
Now, mind you, this was like my seventh year there that they finally fixed it.
It's not important until it is. Mm-hmm. You know,
well, in a corporate environment, something like that isn't important until a manager starts yelling about the money that they're losing off of it.
Right. And I had a similar situation too. One of the things I didn't mention earlier is that with this switch, here's something else that you, when you're using a managed switch router and all that kind of stuff, and you're setting everything up, it's going to give you what connection the speeds are at and all that kind of stuff. And there was a couple of computers that were at 10/100. And I didn't get a good chance to check everything out because it was a late day, and it's something I need to bring up to the customer. I'm going to let them know. Two of the main computers that they use in the front office are running at 10100 speeds versus gigabit speed. Now, as far as internet speed, their internet speed's not super fast there. They have the business line, and I can't remember what it is, but it's not super. It's way below 100. So they should be fine. It shouldn't really matter. Now, if they were transferring files and stuff back and forth, that might become an issue. And here's why it may be an issue in this particular situation is because they need to share QuickBooks between two computers. So they're going to have the database on one computer, and they want to be able to log in from either or. And so because of that, if you have this transfer issue, there might be an issue with the speed. So these are things that I feel that I need to bring up to the customer and let them know so that they can figure out, okay, do they want to pay to get it fixed? And quite honestly, I'm not crawling under nothing and running cable. So in this particular case, I probably have to hire that out and get somebody else to do that. And they've got electricians and whatnot there. It's a construction company. So they've got access to that stuff. That's not a big deal. But that's something we might need to do. And maybe while they're at it, they could pull all those cables out that they don't need. So at what point, though, and I guess this is another point too, Chris, how do you gracefully tell a customer no when they don't want to get their computer fixed right?
Well, different people take it different ways.
I know what I do.
For the most part, yeah, I know what you do too. For the most part, yeah, I just explain to somebody and say, listen, you know, I completely understand that you want your computer fixed. For your computer to be fixed, we need to complete fixing it. Right. So if I just fix this part and I don't fix this, your computer is not going to be working properly. And I feel like I'm taking money from you when you're not really getting the service that you deserve. So if you want me to fix this, that's absolutely fine. But we do need to fix it right. And here's how much it's going to cost. If they get angry about that, you know, I've had someone get angry and say, this is all I need you to do. If you're not going to do that, then you're not the technician for me. And my response is, well, unfortunately, it seems like I'm not the technician for you. You're not the customer for me.
Right.
Because you don't trust me enough to tell you what's wrong with your computer. So I don't really want to continue that relationship if it's not built on trust. And I think that you should find somebody that you're going to have a better relationship with.
Right. John, how do you turn a customer down nicely without you giving them hand gestures?
Well, just like I said last week, be nice. Jerry in the chat put a nice YouTube video link, or mentioned a nice YouTube video link up from Lewis Rossman about where he talks about, you know, you touch it, you own it, or why technicians are ripoffs and that kind of thing. So I'll put that in the show notes. I've watched that before. I've totally forgot about that. That's a great link.
Okay, cool.
Well, two different ways to look at it. If it has something to do with compliance, you know, like I have one orthodontist that just doesn't want to do compliance. So every time she says no to what we need to do, I send back an email that says, well, you do understand that this makes us not compliant, so on and so forth. You know, and then my last question, it is always something to get her to respond, like, you do understand, correct? And then I'll get back the yes, and then I feel good about it because it's not really my problem after that. But there's just times you have to say no, or you have to walk away from the job, because sooner or later, this is just going to create a lot of work for you, or right, a lot of hassle for you. You know, if they want to put in all Windows 10 Home when they need Windows 10 Pro, and they're not understanding, you know, the reason you need to have that, I mean, is that just work you walk away from? Is that something you want to deal with? Or do you just want to charge more to bear with it? You know, whatever that little item might be, or, you know, it's kind of like you're standing in the auto shop and the guy next to you is talking to the service counter writer, and he says, well, I'll just go down to AutoZone and I'll buy my parts and then I'll bring them to you and then you can put them in. And well, not if you expect me to warranty that item or stand behind the work or know the quality of that. You know, don't ask me 2 weeks from now when it doesn't work, why, or expect me to fix it if I didn't have anything to do with it. So just like you hear everywhere else, no means no.
Right. Right. Exactly. Paco.
So it's more, so it's in two ways. One, it's when you're talking to them and you'll get a feel for who they are and what they're asking for. So like I've actually in the last 2 weeks, I've had multiple people say, hey, I need this repaired. I need you to look at it today. It needs to be done by tomorrow. Well, I don't offer same day service at all. So my thing to them is, yeah, unfortunately, that just doesn't fall under what we do here. Or if, you know, they give all kinds of weird scenarios, like they'll bring in the parts or, you know, they'll physically drop it off and tell my receptionist, this needs to be done by later on in the day. And then they'll leave after signing the paperwork, everything. And it says 1 to 2 business days. So I'll have to call them, let them know. They'll tell me, no, it needs to be done today. It's like, nope, you can come and pick it up. Because that's not just what's going to happen. So I've had, those are usually lawyers, but essentially they just think that, you know, it's going to happen their way. And essentially all we do is just basically, that doesn't fall under the policies that we have at our shop here.
Paco, all you have to do is run the CD.
Right.
Just put the CD and run it and you're done.
I have had a couple people where they didn't want to pay upfront for the repair and work before. I've had a couple of those where I've just told them, well, when we discussed this, when you dropped it off, we told you we'll do the diagnostic. We won't take the money up front, but at the end of our diagnostic, we'll tell you what's wrong with it. So either A, you're paying us the diagnostic fee, or B, you're paying us for the service to get the work done and order the parts. So, and especially like a lot of businesses, when we have a business that first comes to us, we ask them for the money up front for the first transaction. And the way I get around that for them to kind of saying like, well, why, you know, or whatever the case, my thing is, well, we want to establish a relationship with you first. And once we get that first transaction gone, good, and everything's good, payment communication's good, then after that, we can develop some type of net agreement because we have developed a relationship and, you know, we'll go from there. So that's how we deal with businesses who kind of, you know, expect things a certain way that just don't fall under maybe a regular shop may do somewhere near us. So, and same thing with the diagnostic as well. We do the diagnostic and basically we tell them what they're in store for. No surprises. If they don't like it, they could just pay the $79 for the diagnostic that they were told about when they dropped it off.
Well, what we do is no different than making hamburgers, really, if you think about it. What do you want to pay and what kind of hamburger do you want? I mean, if you go to McDonald's, you can order at the speaker, drive around in 10 seconds and pick up what some call a hamburger. Or do you want a good quality chunk of steak on a bun that takes more than 30 seconds to heat in the microwave? So, you know, it's all how you want to build your business. You might be really good at turning and burning, same day service or 4 hour service or whatever you want to do. But if that's not the way your business is built and that's not how you want to charge, so on and so forth, then you know, pick the way you want to do business.
Yeah. And for a lot of people, it doesn't work, you know, right. Especially for those that, you know, don't have, you know, 2-3 other techs working for them and they're doing business support. Like I would never feel comfortable offering anybody same day service on a computer repair that they've dropped off. Because for me, you know, I drive over to the UPS store, pick it up, bring it back here. By the time I get back, I might have a call that I have to rush out to for an emergency. Right. So I'm not going to guarantee that to somebody.
And let's be honest. Okay. That's fine. But there's a lot of big box stores out there that you go and put your computer, you drop it off. And sometimes it could be 2+ weeks before you see that thing back. I don't understand where a lot of these companies get the idea that, hey, we can fix it now.
So what I've learned or at least experienced is two things. One, businesses are advertising, other small shops or home businesses are advertising that. So I guess their assumption is, well, I'm seeing a bunch of this on the internet. You're the only business that has an office. Why can't you do what these guys are doing? And then the other piece of it too, is they're probably in a mindset or a profession where they're used to getting their way. So they'll intimidate the business owner or whoever at the front to get it same day. They don't know how to say no, and they accept it. And then either they get it right or they completely, you know, burn down to the ground because they did something wrong, or it ends up being a bigger piece. So,
yeah,
I have a question. What are the shops that guarantee same day service that can't deliver it do? Just say, oh, we couldn't do it. There's no charge. Here's your PC back. No matter what condition it's in.
I'm sure there's probably, they're probably just running all types of hoops. They got to do whatever they can. They're stressed out about it. Who knows? I mean, it could be a wide range of scenarios that can happen. But exactly like you said, what happens when it falls in their face? That's going to be a big learning experience for them because they never probably ran into that just yet until that moment.
Well, and that's a good point, John. I look at a lot of these businesses and I'm thinking the ones that are doing this quick turnaround, a lot of times it's like, okay, so you either have just enough business to run day to day that you're able to do this. But once, if you're that popular and you have a storefront or whatever, and you get computers in and you get, everybody has a breaking point where you can only handle, there's only so many hours in a day, no more than 24. Yeah. There's not 25. 24 hours in a day. That's it. That's all you got. Now you got time in there for eating, pooping, sleeping, and family time.
Wait, you're not doing a laptop repair on the toilet, Jeff?
No, but that's a good idea.
Look, okay, I've seen two scenarios where people offer same day service. And like I said, right, it doesn't work for everybody, but it does work for some people. I've seen repair shops that focus on residential repair that have successfully done same day service. They do same day service for everybody. And then when they get too busy to be able to do same day service and they're not making enough to hire technicians, because let's face it, most of the people who start off with same day guarantees are also charging low rates. They either start charging a premium for the same day service, which lowers the number of people expecting it, or they figure out a way to hire tech and raise their prices a bit to make it work. So I've seen it be successful, but if you grow too fast for how quickly you can hire people and train them, or if you start branching into business, you start running into a lot of problems with it generally.
Right. And there is a, okay. So again, going back to the only so many hours in a day, here's what a lot of people don't see. And this is my point, is that yes, you can do that. But we don't see what's on the surface. We don't see, you know, are people not taking vacations? Are they not taking time away? Are they normally, when you are doing something and you're solely focused on that, other areas of your life will suffer, whether people see it or not. And that's the hard rub, because a lot of people go, oh, they're successful. They're making all kinds of money. They're doing great. And the reality is, yeah, but their life sucks outside of that. So how does that work?
There's a life outside of technology?
Yes. There's supposed to
be. What? Why didn't anybody tell me this?
You can't sit behind your computer with blue headphones on all day long just taking phone calls, Chris.
Why not? Why not? How do you know that this is a chair I'm sitting on, sir?
Oh.
Well, I look at the big guys, even like Dell. So the servers I support, if they're in a mission critical thing, obviously, you know, I've got Dell Pro Support on there, which is supposed to be same day within 4 hours, even parts. And a lot of times, you know, Dell can't even meet that same day.
Right. Sure. And let's be honest, too, though, Dell is usually contracting that out to a bunch of technicians in the area. So their thought, anyway, is that they're going to be able to find somebody.
Right.
Well, right. But you'd think that they, you know, somebody that big with that many resources, not worried about that, you know, selling that type of thing, geared to do that type of thing, would get it right. And I would be willing to bet that it might be 30% of the time that it doesn't happen within that 4 hour limit.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know what their excuse is during those 40% of the time? I'm waiting for the part.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, and that's the other thing, too. Think about your ISPs. If you get a business contract, and guys, correct me if I'm wrong. My understanding is they have a response time of 2 to 4 hours, whatever it is, depending on the service, right? But that doesn't mean they have a 2 or 4 hour fix time. Go ahead.
So I can tell you, because I've worked on the help desk for Roadrunner, Bright House, and Time Warner, both. And I have business internet here, and I can tell you that I've never had an internet provider that ever actually guarantees a 2 to 4 hour response time. They'll guarantee a 24-hour response time for a critical business down situation.
Okay.
Which means that you will get somebody that day or next day, but they do not guarantee a time frame.
Okay. Anyone else? Any others to Crit or John?
No.
Okay. All right. So, I mean, so you look at these companies and I don't know. It's just, again, there's many different ways of doing business and that's fine. You just have to, you have to do it to a point that's going to make sense for you. And I think when it comes to fixing things right, here's my thing is a lot of times I'm old school and I'm basically one of these people that says, you know what? It's going to take us 3 days and I get it back to you in 24. Now you're happy because I've set your expectations up front and you go, wow, you got it back really quick. And I'm, yeah, no problem. Go ahead, John.
Well, I'm just saying there are places where this is excellent. So cell phone repair shops, you know, I would say 90% of the time you could walk in there and with, you know, an hour or two later, you could walk out. Yes. But it depends on what they're telling you that they'll fix that fast. It might be pretty easy when you have a limited product set, maybe like iPhones.
Sure.
You know, where you can stock and have the majority of the parts in there. But, you know, you never know if you're going to need a Toshiba motherboard for some model that, you know, doesn't exist in the United States that somebody bought in Europe on vacation. I mean, you know, that's extreme. But obviously, I'm not saying this is a bad idea. I just say you have to build your business. If that's what you're going to do, is it same day turnaround for virus removal? Well, that's pretty easy, but you can't guarantee every same day repair.
Right, exactly.
And what's funny is that I've actually had that scenario that John said multiple times where people out of country who are visiting wants a PC repaired. It's a hardware issue and they're flying out. Let's say they call in Thursday. They're flying out Sunday morning.
Yeah, I've had the same thing. And I'm like, really? You think I could just, you know, I work out of my house, right?
Yeah, they normally, yeah, I don't understand. My thing is like, I'd have to order it from where you're going to go back to come back to get it here to install it for you to get it. Yeah, it won't happen. You might want to do it over there.
Yeah, exactly. That makes more sense. All right. Any other things we need to touch on? I think we've kind of covered the gambit of fixing things right in making a decision one way or another. It kind of went off on a couple of tangents, but that's okay.
Well, I mean, you know, one more tangent that's related and it kind of got brought up, you know, set that expectation for the customer. Right. I mean, and if you set expectations that are further out than what you think it's going to be, you are going to look like a superhero when you get it done. But if you don't manage those expectations, it doesn't matter whether you do it right. It doesn't matter whether the customer, you know, gets back what they're supposed to get back. The minute you don't meet the expectations that you set, everything's your fault, whether it's working or not.
And I don't like being on a clock. I like to take my time and make sure that I'm doing everything right. And a lot of times, to be honest with you, even with the probably for a lot of people, the cheaper service that I might charge, I tend to go above and beyond the call of duty just to make sure that everything is operating correctly. I test more things than probably a lot of people. And just because I want the customer to be satisfied, and it's more of a personal one-on-one relationship with the customer. And that's what I've been preaching for a long time. That's what I do. And that works for me. It leaves me a lot less stress because I'll be honest with you, anything that you do, you know, I'm doing a network install. I mean, you're constantly, at first it starts off, the first 3 hours fly by, you got everything hooked up, everything's going good. Then all of a sudden, hour number four problem starts. And you're like, wait a minute. Oh, and you're like, I don't want to be here any longer. So it does catch up to you. But all right. Any other closing thoughts, John, Paco? Good. All right. Let's go ahead and take a quick another break. DC On Convention 2017 in Washington, D.C., September 16th and 17th. IT Conference for Techs and Business Owners Reimagined. Learn from fellow techs and business owners. Get business strategies that work in the real world, not made-up stuff that only works on TV. Discover new tech. If you're an owner operator in managed services, IT consulting, or a break-fix tech, this is the place for you. Get your hotel and tickets now. Only 100 tickets available, so hurry up and get those and get your hotel booked early. go to unconvention.io and get all the information right there. All right, let's answer some emails and take some phone calls. Phone lines are open. The call-in number is 1-888-697-0162. And the first email, this is a long one. We were talking about the difference between the two types of M.2 drives. It says, "Hi, Jeff. Thanks for the nice words during the podcast about my systems." This is from Anthony Remus. "I wanted to comment on M.2 drives based on the comments on the show. There are basically two types of M.2 SSD drives, NVMe and ACHI, the SATA-based ones. NVMe drives are new super fast ones, which use a different protocol, which enables them to be faster and use less CPU overhead, as well as per IOPS. And ACHI are the same protocol in performance as a SATA SSD, even though it is on an M.2 connector." So they answered the question that I had about what's faster. If you get a regular SATA drive that's an M.2, it's the same as getting, like, if you get a Samsung Evo that's an M.2 or a Samsung Evo that's a 2.5-inch drive, and they're both SATA drives. They're both running, even though there's no cable connection on the M.2 connector, it's still running through the same channels, and it's getting the same identical bandwidth as the 2.5-inch. Now, the NVMe are the newer, faster drives. "Also, with NVMe drives, I've seen proper performance through true PCIe 3.0 adapters when natively connected in a PCIe 3.0x4 M.2 port. The Samsung 950 Pro and faster drives like the 960 series will get bottlenecked by a PCIe 2.0 M.2 connector, which are out there on some motherboards as well as some PCIe to M.2 adapters. The Asus X99M, board, for example, is an excellent mini ATX board and X99 workstation motherboard. Nearly perfect except for the M.2, which is a PCI 2.0. So now that both ACHI M.2 and 2.5 SATA drives offer the same performance, I use an M.2 drive whenever possible because I see it as less failure points. No SATA or power cable connection." And just to make a side note, Anthony did send me some, and I'll try to put these out there. He sent me some builds that he did for a firm that's doing CAD programs. And these machines are beautiful. There's little to no cables in these things, and it's just phenomenally. I mean, it's like a wide open spaces, and they look so cool. Let's see. He says, "I am also keeping an eye on a Western Digital M.2 SSD, which John discussed some of those. But since I like to standardize my parts list, I will likely stay with Crucial. Western Digital Blue SSD series is basically the same SanDisk SSD drives since they purchased SanDisk, but have not really had time to innovate the Blue series. The Black series is an affordable NVMe solution with less speed of the Samsung NVMe, but also a lot cheaper too. So that's something to look at. Anyways, I may have shared more than you were looking for, but I figure you can cut out the stuff you would not want to share on the show. Thanks, Anthony." Appreciate that, Anthony.
Anthony, you thought wrong.
Yeah.
I'm kidding.
Anyways, he's also using the Crucial MX300 series as well, I believe. So, and he was talking about how he uses Micron NAND, which Micron's been around forever, even way before I ever got started in this business. So, and they've,
old.
Yeah, they've been a hard standard for many, many years. So anyways, that was from Anthony. Appreciate it, Anthony. Thank you so much for that information. You cleared it up for me that not everything you plug into an M.2 is going to be the same. So now I want an NVMe. I don't know why, but I do.
And if you happen to get an NVMe, it is backwards compatible, isn't it?
As far as what? I think you have to have a motherboard that's going to support that. Well, I guess
if you had an NVMe M2 drive, won't it fall back to SATA and connect? I'm asking.
Yeah, I don't know.
I never even looked.
I'm not sure. I just want to plug it in and play with it. That's all. Plug and play, man. That's what we do. I just stick a CD in to load the operating system. Come on.
You still have CD drives?
Yes, I do.
Oh.
And I still have everyone.
My zip drive.
Yeah, I've got one of those too.
Just in case. Jazz drive.
Oh, yep. Yep.
Jazz. There we go.
All right. Now we're going to play that game. Okay. So this is my CD drive.
Yep. Huh? I got one of those.
And then this. Anybody recognize that? IBM?
Floppy. Oh, I got one of those. Yeah. The only one that was compatible. Yeah.
Plug in floppy. No, I still have some old ones that I just run the cables. If I ever need to.
No, but that IBM one is an important one.
It is.
You know why that is important?
No, tell me
why, Chris.
Well, I mean, it was important for me because every time I got called out to Honda, I needed to use it. But why is it important for you?
Well, it's one of the few where the drive, it actually works all the time consistently.
Oh, yeah.
You go to use it on the server build. Because not all USB floppy drives work. There's that one, and there's like another one.
No, okay. Which version?
I think it's Fujitsu.
Is it Fujitsu or was it? No, it wasn't Dell. Dell? I can't remember. But IBM was the standard. And that's the thing. When I got this, I thought, oh, man, I'm never going to use this. I had four of them. And the other three I wound up selling, and I'm regretting that now because they're like bullets.
Well, okay, when's the last time somebody's seen an actual floppy disk?
3 months ago.
Yesterday.
You guys are just weird.
Right, that's what I was going to say.
Oh, okay. I mean, from a customer. When's the last time a customer has brought, hey, I need the information off this disk?
3 months ago.
Okay.
Yeah. In fact, today I got a phone call asking if I could do an on-site, which I turned down, to fix a production system that was still running DOS.
I had a data migration from a 98 to a 7.
There you go.
Wow. No, you know what? I'd rather stick two forks in my eye. No, thank you. Anyways. All right. Email number two. This is from Richard Irving or Irvine. Richard, I apologize. Hey, Jeff, I'm looking at a video card for the custom computer I just built. I am stuck looking at $250 or less. Don't want to break the bank. What is the best video card in that budget? Best bang for the buck. Motherboard is a Gigabyte. RAM is Corsair. I do not play video games, but I did just buy GTA 5 for PC, and I'm going to try it. Video card has to support HD, obviously, and dual monitors. Thanks, and I love your show. And Richard Irving, that's Rich Computer Repair. I like the name. So what I did was I sent him a response back, and I'll let you guys chime in a minute. But so I went and looked on my favorite website, PCPer.com. And that's PC Perspective with Ryan Shroud over there and his gang of people. And basically, I always look at their hardware leaderboard for things that, as far as hardware and stuff that I need, because I don't want to go and do all the research, which I used to do way back in the day and just don't find it fun anymore. So I'll let somebody else tell me what the best bang for the buck is. And they have not steered me wrong in many, many years. So what I sent them over was on the medium build system, there is a Sapphire Nitro Plus Radeon RX 480, $250. And so I basically sent him that response. And that to me is the best bang for the buck. I wouldn't go any lower than that. But he basically had sent me a response back and said, hey, that's great. Appreciate that. But it's $350 here in Canada.
Oh, he's Canadian.
And I said, okay. I said, I apologize. I totally forgot about the Canadian tax.
Hold on.
And so I said, you could go down to the 460, which I think US, it was 125 or something like that. And you might be able to overclock it a bit to get close to the 480. But my kids are actually using 480s in their computers. And at 1080p, it'll play every game, full resolution, no problem. All the bells and whistles. It just works. So I am an NVIDIA snob myself. I prefer NVIDIA, and it's only because I'm a snob, to be honest with you.
It's not because you're a snob. NVIDIA is the best. And if anybody says any different, then we'll have words outside the flagpole.
So anyways, that was the response I sent him. And Chris, what were you saying? What type of video card would you go with?
MSI GTX 1060, 6 gig.
See, I won't do a 1060. I won't go down to that lower tier like that.
Because you're not in Canada.
Well, that's true. That's all right. True.
So to give you an idea, if you're looking at the 6 gig 1060, now we're looking at the MSI 1060 because they overclock better. You are looking at $359.99 plus 13% tax. Wow, that didn't come out right.
So that's not even in the ballpark anyways. He said 250.
No, it's not. But you can't go lower than that if you want a max graphics. $406.79.
You could probably, on the ATI side, you could probably get away with the 460, and it would be fine for what he's doing. As long as if he's doing 1080p, it's amazing how things run on lower end gear nowadays if you're not doing 2K or 4K.
So. Oh, no, that's true. I mean, John, get out of the chat. ATI is the best.
And John, do you have any? I know you don't have any thoughts, but I'll ask anyways.
I call you.
Exactly. So I knew you wouldn't have any thoughts. Paco?
I haven't played a video game on a computer since Hitman first came out.
Great game.
Wow. No, and the first one sucked.
Hey,
it sucked.
Yeah, I have to give you that.
The controls, were horrible. The ones right. after that yeah. were awesome.
Two was a lot better than one. I'll give you that. But one is such a nostalgia. But I agree with you.
Yeah. It was hard, man. You'd go to do something and move, and it'd be like, it's not working. But no, I want to strangle the guy. Wait, it's not.
Right.
It won't let me pull out my
the
throat.
Piano wire at the wrong moment.
Yep. I didn't want to pull out my silenced pistol. Oh, great. Now I just alerted everybody. I'm dead.
That's the last PC game I played.
Oh, okay. So what's the last console game?
Last console game, Watch Dogs 3 years ago.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Or 2 years ago, whichever, whenever it came out.
I still haven't finished it.
If only hacking was that easy.
What's that, Chris?
If only hacking was that easy.
Yeah, no kidding.
Okay, you just pull out your cell phone and hit a button. It's like, oh, look, I just hacked into the computer system.
All right, so let's go into our last email. And this is probably going to promote a little discussion, I think. And so one of the other things I did when I responded to Richard is I said, hey, is there anything you'd like to hear about on the show? And so he said, thanks for the quick reply, sir. And he said, what to do in a small town of 1,500 people or less when everyone is super cheap and trying to run a computer business is tough. Everyone here expects a $30 repair. So when I say 80, they don't like it. What would you do?
Okay. Can we first discuss the most important part of that entire sequence? How did you feel about being called sir?
Oh, I like it because it shows respect. Oh. You should learn to do it, Chris.
The last time somebody called me sir was during basic training, and I told them that I worked for a living.
Yeah, I use that line too because I actually do work for a living in many different facets of my life, but it doesn't matter.
So I can tell you from experience. That when you're in a small town, if anybody wants to look up the population of Glencoe, Ontario, you're not just going to have to take my word for it. In small towns, there is that mindset that I can get it done cheaper. And here's what's going to happen. If you persevere and keep insisting on your price, that will become the norm. Because if you, like my town, is at least an hour away from anybody else that can do that type of work, they're going to pay you the $80. They're not going to want to spend the gas money going out there, dropping it off, and then going back in a day or two to get it again. All right. So play on that laziness, play on that that want to have something local, and it will wind up working out for you in the end.
Okay. John?
I can't argue with that. I don't particularly have that problem. I'm in a pretty big city, but again, I would say perseverance would be the way you want to go. Maybe you can't go to 80, but you know, try to stay higher than everybody else, be the premium brand. And if you actually do good work, I think you will eventually siphon everybody up because they won't be able to stick around at that low, cheap price.
Good points. Paco?
Pretty much what everybody else said, but I think the biggest piece they need to work or he needs to look at is how is he different from everybody else with his offering? So if it's $80, what is the client going to get for the $80, not what he's doing as far as services or whatever, but how does that benefit the client? Hey, yeah, you can go and get it for $30 at Joe Schmo across the street, but he's going to take 3 to 7 days and he probably doesn't back it with a warranty. $80, you get a X amount of day warranty. We're using these type of parts that have this X amount of warranty. And guess what? You get follow up for whatever, because this is included. Whatever it is that may be, or he just needs to repackage what he's offering if it is the same thing that he's offering for the town, and basically tell everybody things that his other competitors are not saying. So, for example, hey, if you have a problem with it, we'll make sure to work with you until we make it right. Because most of us will do that, but we don't advertise that as risk-free. Because like for me, I'm going to do that because I don't want a bad review. But I was taught that, you know what, if you advertise it up front, you'll get client. Yeah, you'll get a few of them that will go ahead and take advantage of it. But the majority of them will appreciate that you're willing to go the extra mile for them. And that's why you might go to them. Or they may go to you, I should say. They may go to you to get that service. So that's kind of what I would do in his case. I would basically still persevere. I would still stay with the $80, but I would either offer more that wouldn't cost him too much more money or time, or repackage it so it looks like it's something completely different than what everyone else is offering.
Maybe this is the place where you do need to do that same day service, at least for a while, to differentiate yourself, as Paco was suggesting.
Yeah. Now just look into it to work smarter, not harder. So like whether that be like the StarTech duplicator, because Windows OS crashes on a 10 system, helps you out in 15 minutes, you can get it back to them and you say 4 hours and it's this rate. And then you can kind of work your way that way. So, I mean, that's some of the things you got to remember, is that customer experience is what people are going to pay for. It's not the service, it's not the product. However you treat the customer, as long as they're satisfied, but it works to what they need it to, or you're helping a pain point for them, that's why they're paying the money.
And I will second all that. Very good information, guys. One of the things that I thought about when this topic came up, or this question came up, is that I was thinking about it and I said, okay, if you are supporting businesses, even in a small town, doesn't matter where you're at, if you go into that business, plumber, banker, lawyer, so on and so forth, widget maker, doesn't really matter. Can you go in there and find out that people that are working for that business are only charging $30 for a service? And in, I mean, unless it's a really small service. Here's the thing I look at. I look at doctors and auto mechanics and different people that have different types of businesses. And I look at how long. See, I don't just go by one thing, where if somebody sells a widget for $10, then they go, well, wait a minute, why are you charging me $80 an hour? And to that, I have to say, well, listen, I'm good at what I do. You're good at what you do. I'm going to spend an hour fixing whatever for the $80. You just spent X amount of minutes to make this widget or whatever, to sell it. So when you look at the time difference between what's being charged, you can really easily figure out what a lot of people are getting paid per hour, or what their business is making per hour, versus what you're actually charging per hour. So that's what I look at. I look at, hey, you know, a doctor spends 15 minutes with me, and they're making whatever. They might spend 15 minutes and they make $50. Okay, that's a pretty good rate, because if I add 15 minutes up four times, that's an hour. That's $200, people. $200. And it's, you're worried about 80?
And then another thing too is that, let's say in a rare case, let's say you're not comfortable with what you're offering, you can't think of how to repackage what you're offering, then maybe it's a time to look into getting training. Maybe it makes sense to do the virus doctor's course, so you can do virus removals more efficiently. And now you can say, hey, I'm going to charge this, but I can make sure that your computer's back within an hour and a half to 2 hours. You know, if it makes sense to go to a convention, again, the unconvention. It's $200 for the ticket now, maybe $300 if you wait, or depending on how much they, you know, make it later on because these are early bird tickets. But essentially, let's say you go on and it's more. I mean, that's going to be an investment to yourself to get the education so that you can charge that back. It's a write-off. It's a deduction. It's something that you're investing in yourself that you can make even more money on something you didn't have before. Another thing is just, you know, look at the resources you have already. I mean, if he's been a long listener, he has to have gotten a lot of value from Podnuts, especially Podnuts Daily, because for me, that's where the rubber meets the road. And from listening to that show, as I mentioned multiple times before, I'd been doing this for now going on 17 years. And it wasn't until the past 3 years, I've become a much better tech than the previous 14, because now I've got a community. Now I've got a lot of resources. Now I've gotten available avenues to help improve my niche and my skill set to move forward. So if you're really stuck in turning the wheels, maybe it's time to maybe really invest in yourself and figure out, maybe there's some things I need to go ahead and do so I can make sure in my own mentality justify why I'm charging this rate.
Keep in mind too, I mean, don't forget to talk to your vendors. They want you to succeed just as much as you do. So if you're using an RMM platform or a managed online backup platform, you know, generally if you reach out to your rep or your manager and ask them like, hey, you know, when's the next webinar? They're going to have one. So that you can get in on a webinar and you can learn how to better market the product and you can learn how to, you know, make better packages to fall in line with, you know, getting more profit for what you're doing. You know, if you're using me, you know, I sit down one-on-one all the time with my clients and help them figure back out pricing and how they can roll in their MSP and the online backup, right? Because it's the same thing. You know, if my clients are growing, that means that I'm growing and we all win. So don't be afraid to reach out, because if you're too afraid to ask for help, you're probably not going to get it.
Good point.
I would also suggest at the beginning is make sure you're not whining too. I mean, it's not easy. This whole thing's not supposed to be easy. If it was easy, everybody would be successful at it and doing it all the time. I mean, I learned something, you know, the only thing I know for sure is I don't know everything. So I learn something every time I get on this show. But you know, you're going to have to do a little bit of your own research and to see, well, can your competitors actually survive at that rate at $30? I mean, can you do that in the town that you live in? I'm sure there's some places probably in America where you can pull that off. But if not, you know, they're not going to be around that long. So how do you get your teeth into those customers once that other provider is gone? And say, hey, I charge this much because I have insurance, because I do training, because, you know, I do the right things. I'm going to be here long term when this stuff breaks. So,
right. And that's a good point, because thinking about this, some of the jobs that we end up doing, sometimes we end up going in and fixing somebody else's mess. Yep. And that usually takes more time, more money for the customer. And it's never a super easy process. There's so many different variables that you have to think about. So when we're going in and fixing something because somebody got out of the business because they were in it for 8 months at cheap prices, I figure most of those people, all of them go away eventually, because you either get so sick and tired of doing this for such a cheap price, or you just, yeah, I think that's really the biggest thing. You just don't want to do it for that cheap price because it gets old after a while. I'll fix anything. I really will. And like I was telling Paco the other day, everybody has a price, including me.
Yep.
All right. I think, unless you guys have any other comments on that, I think we'll go ahead and move on. If you want your questions answered on the air, then send an email to podnuts@podnuts.com or leave a voicemail at 1-888-697-0162. And get you all your questions answered there, or you can call in live. All right, so let's see. Chris, let's start off with you. Give people one parting thought and let them know where they can find you.
Home is where your heart is. So your real home's in your chest. So my name is Chris. I'm here from Remote Support Tech Team. We do white label IT services. And hey, just for a special treat for all of you that are listening here at Podnuts, if you don't want to buy your own Z install and deal with it yourself, I'm not going to charge anybody monthly rates that's listening to this podcast right now. You can go ahead and use me for $80 a pop to do these transfers if you want without an account. So keep that in mind. Don't pass it around, but make sure you tell me when you give us a shout. You can give me a call, 866-568-2813, or you can send me an email, info@rstechteam.com.
Awesome. Hey, take Chris up on that offer. There's a lot of work I don't want to do. So that's a good deal. All right. And let's see, John, give people one parting thought and let them know where they can find you.
A part of that would be just ask, and that would go back to that last conversation we were having about the cheap prices and the location they are. I don't think we probably have enough information to give a definitive answer to help that person out. And I'm not sure I've ever met that person, but I'm sure one of us here or somebody that's been on the show would be more than willing to have a conversation or a consultation. And I mean, you know, just a tech-to-tech conversation to try to help out or give some ideas. Because I certainly want somebody to struggle and lose their livelihood and when one of us could give them a helping hand. So I would say just ask. MavenGroup.net is my website. And I expect everybody in the Chicago area to be at Channel Pro 2017. I'll have a link in the show notes. But I'll give some first names of people that I know are going for sure. Stuart, Jerry, myself, Paco. I'm sure nobody knows who that is, but there's a bunch of us going. So if anybody else can make it, come on down.
Awesome.
To Channel Pro 2017 in Chicago.
And I will second what John said. Yeah, that's the reason, guys, I didn't do this podcast so that I could just hear myself talk, because quite honestly, I hear myself talk in my head all the time. So the reason we do this podcast is so that we can bring information and try to flesh out some ideas that we can all use. And I agree with John. Yeah, reach out and let us know if there's something we can help you with. If you want some specifics, we can talk about those things. And that's what we're here. We're here to help. All right, Paco, give us a parting thought and let them know where they can find you.
Yeah. Don't overthink, but always think ahead. For anyone who wants to reach out to me, I know we've been in a little bit of hiatus over at the other place over at Tech Site Builder. We are working on building out a new podcast. As everyone knows, Computer Business Podcast is over. So we'll be relaunching soon. We'll give more details on that. For anyone who wants to, and I was actually told this, whoever wants to see me, they can see me here every other week on the Computer Repair Live Show. Anyone who wants to contact me, you can reach me over on my site on prodigytext.com.
Awesome.
Because every time I would say I'm here every week, but for those who wanted to reach me, I never really gave a way for them to get hold of me.
Good catch. And we learn new things all the time. All right. Come join us live for the Computer Repair Podcast every Sunday at 4 p.m. Eastern over at podnets.com/Computer Repair Podcast Live. Because I will be here for sure. Join in on the conversation by calling in live and hanging out in the chat room. We have audio available over at podnets.com or subscribe using your favorite podcatcher. You can be notified when the show is going live by subscribing to our YouTube channel, Computer Repair Podcast. I want to thank everyone for listening and subscribing to the show. We'll see you next time on Podnuts, the Computer Repair Podcast. Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.